Hello again, this is Carol Bond returning with the Decatur Herald Review, dated May 3rd, 2016. We'll begin this portion of our program with the obituaries. Joanne Bechtold Chu, 91, of Hot Springs Village, Arkansas, passed away on April 23rd, 2016, in Lake Hamilton, Arkansas. Memorial service will be 1 p.m. Wednesday at Christ of the Hills United Methodist Church with Reverend R.T. Jarrell and Dr. Walter Bubba Smith officiating. Memorial gifts may be made in her name to the Christ of the Hills United Methodist Church, Hot Springs Village, Arkansas, or to the Arkansas Alzheimer's Association. Mary C. Berry, 51, of Macon, passed away on Sunday, May 1st, at St. Mary's Hospital. A service to celebrate Mary's life will be held at 10 a.m. on Friday, May 6th, at Dawson and Wyckoff Funeral Home, Macon. The family will receive friends for a time of visitation from 5 to 8 p.m. on Thursday. Mary will be laid to rest in South Macon Township Cemetery. Memorial contributions may be directed to Dove, D-O-V-E, an abbreviation. Nancy Carol Spiegel Munson, 77, of Tucson, Arizona, formerly of Decatur, Illinois, passed away Saturday, April 23, 2016, at Haven of Tucson. Nancy's final resting place will be beside her beloved son, Les Munson, at South Lawn Cemetery, Tucson. Eleanor L. Sullivan, 87, of Decatur, formerly of Assumption, passed away Sunday, May 1st, in Hickory Point Christian Village, with her family by her side. Visitation will be Wednesday, May 4th, from 5 to 7 at the Morin and Gerbel Funeral Home. Vigil prayer service will be at 4:30 p.m. An additional visitation will be 1 hour prior to Mass of Christian Burial at 11 a.m. Thursday, May 5th, in St. Mary's Catholic Church, Assumption. Reverend Donald Wolford, celebrant. Burial will follow in St. Mary's Cemetery, Assumption. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be made to Assumption VFW Post 6577 or St. Jude Children's Hospital. William L. Vaughn, Jr., 60, of Decatur, passed away Thursday, April 28th, in his home. Graveside services to celebrate Bill's life will be 1 p.m. Thursday, May 5th, at Graceland Cemetery. The family of William L. Vaughn, Jr. is being served by the Graceland Fairlawn Funeral Home, Decatur. Rex D. Wiley, Sr., 74, of Decatur, passed away Thursday, April 28th, at St. Mary's Hospital in Decatur. The family will host a graveside service at 1 p.m. Tuesday, May 3rd, at Mount Gilead Cemetery. Memorials may be directed to the donor's choice. The family of Rex D. Wiley, Sr. is being served by Graceland Fairlawn Funeral Home, Decatur. We'll turn now to our columnists. Mary Hunt, for the Herald and Review, has this article, Brown Bag Lunches Are Better Than Bought Lunches. And this is what she says. I know people who try to convince themselves they can buy lunch every day for less than they'd spend on groceries needed to bring lunch to work. That kind of flawed thinking could very well be the reason those same people complain that they do not have money to put away for savings. eating out for lunch every day, day after day, is expensive. Let me do the math. $10 times 5 days equals $50 per week, and $50 times 52 weeks equals $2,500 per year, and that's just a quick estimate. If you cut that number in half by bringing your lunch to work, you'd have around $1,250 left to put toward your savings. However, I'm certain that with the right incentive, having money in the bank is a great one, you could do even better than that. But would you? Would you transfer $25 or more to your savings account every week to reward your brown bag efforts? Only you can answer that question, but I have every confidence that you would. The secret to successful brown bag lunches is twofold. Your lunch must be visually appealing and delightfully delicious. Here are some ideas. First, invest in a good lunch container. For me, a true brown bag is too flimsy. I want a lunch bag that is insulated, sturdy, leak-proof, and as attractive as possible. The Freddie and Sebi lunch bag is practical and cute. Made of neoprene, it is insulated, has a zipper, and is as practical as it is fun to carry. And it comes in a variety of colors. For a family-sized lunch, I have a large insulated cooler bag that meets the same criteria. The Everest cooler lunch bag is a more masculine but equally practical option. The true test of a good lunch container is how often it is used. Next, use bento boxes. These are portable food boxes with compartments that fit inside the lunch box. The best bento boxes, in my opinion, have tight-fitting lids. I use a set of Happy Lunch Boxes, 4-compartment leak-proof bento lunchbox containers. I find myself using them to store leftovers as well as my lunch. While it's not completely leak-proof, I wouldn't fill a container with milk, for example, they are leak-resistant and keep lunch items fresh and tasty. Next, pack heat. Take a hot lunch to work or school, or pretty much a meeting or anywhere you need to go during the week, Pack that in a wide-mouth thermos. You can fill it with soup or any hot food you can fit, and it will stay hot for at least 5 hours. It can also keep food cold. The Thermos Stainless Steel King food jar has a 16-ounce capacity and is very well insulated. You don't have to worry about any surprise. You don't have to worry about the thing breaking like those old glass-lined thermoses you may remember. The wide mouth makes this thermos easy to fill, and the extra-large lid doubles as a serving bowl. And surprise, there's a handy fold-up spoon tucked inside the lid. Of course, there are many thermoses to choose from. I just mentioned this one because it is well-priced and practical in every way. Next, mason jar salads. The great thing about packing a salad and dressing into a quart or pint-sized mason jar is that you can make salads ahead of time, an entire week's worth if you want. When you're done putting them together, you just line them up in the refrigerator and you're ready to grab and go. If you are not into mason jars, consider a salad shaker, a compact container that you can load your salad ingredients into, complete with a nifty smaller container for the dressing and fork. The container pieces fit together like a puzzle, which makes eating lunch fast and easy, and it's cheap too. Finally, one more. Enjoy extra time. There's no doubt that going out for lunch takes more time than going to the break room and pulling lunch out of your bag. It doesn't take most people an hour to eat, so by bringing your lunch to work, you can easily end up with 30 minutes of extra time. Take a walk or catch up on your personal emails, knit, crochet, or even better, take a nap. Finally, strategic meal planning. When you make dinner, think strategically about leftovers. Make extra rice, cook an additional chicken breast, then divvy up the leftovers into bento boxes or other containers. Add a salad and you'll be good to go for the next day. Let's assume that buying your lunch has become a habit, one you decide you need to break. The way to do that successfully is to replace that bad habit with a good habit. Adding money to your savings account every time you bring your lunch from home is just that. It's a small reward that will develop into a wonderful new habit, one that will bless you in the future. We move right on to Dear Abby, and the first letter to Jean Phillips is this. Dear Abby, I have a hard time differentiating between enabling and just helping out my sister. Throughout her adult life, even while she was married, she has never been able to make ends meet. She's single now and in her 50s, a hardworking but underemployed, depressed individual. I have a good job and I feel guilty if I don't help her each month. She doesn't ask, but drops enough hints that I know things aren't going well. I have suggested repeatedly that she needs to find a better job. I even send her job leads, but I'm not sure she actually ever applies. My friends and relatives say I should use tough love and stop helping her, but I hate to see her struggle and I don't want her kicked out of her apartment. I will be retiring soon and won't be able to continue giving her money. What should I do? Signed, Sympathetic in San Diego. Dear Sympathetic, have a frank talk with your sister now. Ask her how many of the leads you gave her were followed up on. Because you say she is chronically depressed, encourage her to see a doctor and find out what kind of help there is for her. It may be the reason for her divorce and for her inability to seek other work and improve her financial situation. That you will no longer be able to continue assisting her financially is something your sister needs to know ASAP, so she won't be cut off abruptly. This isn't tough love. That you will be on a fixed income is a fact of life. You have been a wonderful sister. You've done more than many people would, so do not feel guilty for taking care of yourself. And the next letter, Dear Abby, it has been 8 years since my first love, Oliver, and I broke up. It was amicable, and we both had closure. I have been in my current relationship for 6 years. We love each other very much and have two beautiful kids together. I don't often think about Oliver, and we haven't spoken since our split. But the crazy thing is, I dream about him constantly. The dreams are pretty tame and they don't make sense. I don't understand why this is happening. I know myself and I know I don't miss Oliver. I'm happy in my current relationship. So what gives, Abby? Signed, Troubled Out West. Dear Troubled, I'm sure it's nothing to worry about. I was taught years ago that the things we see in our dreams are manifestations of our subconscious and are not meant to be taken literally. What you are dreaming about may not actually be Oliver at all, but something he symbolizes. Perhaps it's freedom or youth. Who knows? But if the dreams persist and they bother you, I'm sure a couple of sessions with a licensed mental health professional would ease your mind. We'll turn now to the editorial page, and this is the lead editorial with the headline, Give Local Governments More Control. One of the behind-the-scenes but important issues in the ongoing impasse between Governor Bruce Rauner and House Speaker Michael Madigan is how much control local governments will have over their own finances. Although he's mentioned it less in the last several weeks, one of Rauner's desires is to freeze property taxes in the state. That's significant, since a study last week found that Illinois residents pay the highest property tax rate in the nation. Other studies have put the state's property tax bills at second or third highest in the nation. Rauner believes that along with freezing property taxes, local governments need to be given more control over their own finances. That's why he favors letting local communities decide on issues such as prevailing wage and opening union negotiation to more issues. Much of that local authority has been taken away by the General Assembly over the years. A lot of those moves have been in favor of both public and private labor unions, which have generally found it more convenient to deal with the state legislature than the thousands of local governments. Taken together, this set of issues is the ultimate unfounded mandate. Legislators often pass these laws with little or no regard to the impact they will have on local taxes. As an example, Republicans and Democrats worked together a year ago to pass legislation that requires cities to negotiate staffing requirements with unions representing fire departments. That limits the power elected officials have on this decision. Past legislatures have also sweetened the pensions of local government workers at the expense of local taxpayers. There are many examples. These various laws and regulations may seem innocent enough, but the impact is higher property taxes. That's why Madigan's constant claim that he is protecting the middle class is so ludicrous. Many of the policies supported by Madigan heap additional taxes onto the middle class, hamper the creation of middle class jobs, and have resulted in an exodus of residents from the state. From a governing standpoint, the more control given to local governments, the better. We've been and will continue to be critical of decisions by local governments, but we are definitely more comfortable with decisions made by local governments than those made in Springfield. Unfortunately, Rauner has allowed his agenda to be painted as anti-union instead of pro-taxpayer. Taxpayers in Illinois are overtaxed, and the property tax is a big part of that. One way to reduce taxes is to reduce the overall size of government. But another way is to give local governments more control over their own expenses. If that were to happen, voters would more easily know where to exert pressure in order to lower property taxes. We'll turn again to page 3 for the column called Local Briefs. 0503. The NAACP Decatur Branch's 76th Annual Freedom Fund Banquet and Game Changers Awards Ceremony will be held Saturday, May 14th at the Decatur Civic Center. Doors open at 6 p.m. and the event begins at 6:30 p.m. The formal attire affair is $35 per person. Please call the local National Association for the Advancement of Colored People at 877-2439 before Sunday, May 8th, to reserve tickets. No tickets will be sold at the door. The U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development has awarded $133,088 to CEFS Economic Opportunity Corporation in Effingham for transitional housing. and $46,933 to the Decatur Housing Authority and Macon County Continuum of Care for a rental project. HSHS St. Mary's Hospital Auxiliary will present its Spring Craft Show and Raffle from 7 a.m. to 3 p.m. today in the Assisi Room at St. Mary's. The raffle winners will be announced on Friday, May 6th. Tickets are $5 per ticket or 3 tickets for $10. More than $500 in prizes are available. Crossing Healthcare will host the first of Decatur's Walk with a Doc, DOC, programs at 8 a.m. today. Participants will meet at Crossing, 320 East Central Avenue, and walk with Dr. Dana Ray and other healthcare professionals who will provide support and answer questions. Walk with a Doc is a national nonprofit organization to encourage healthy physical activity. This is a free program with no registration required. For more information, visit www.walkwithadoc.org. Learn how to identify birds and assist in estate bird count during Into the Wild at 10 a.m. Saturday, May 7th. There is a hike that goes along with this, and it's free and open to all ages. It's on May 7th in Rock Springs Nature Center. And that's the conclusion of our A3 briefs, but we also want to take a look at a feature article on the same page. The dateline is Sullivan, and the headline is Gene Harshman's License Collection Nearly Complete. And this was written by Justin Kahn. Gene Harshman is close to completing a collection he unknowingly started in 1948. That was the year Harshman, 91, got his first vehicle, a 1948 Chevrolet. Harshman kept that license plate and everyone thereafter until Illinois began issuing stickers instead of new plates every year in 1980. 2 years ago, Harshman decided to expand his collection. He began acquiring plates and now has every plate from 1911 through 1980. He also has a 1907 and 1908. He needs only the 1909 and 1910 plates to complete his collection. Quote, I had all of those old plates stored in a box, and I was wondering what to do with them. Then I thought, I have a good start. Why not go for the whole works, Harshman said. So I started hunting for plates. Harshman has all the plates from 1948 to 1980 displayed in a wooden case with a glass cover. He has a display case for the others too, but is still deciding how he wants to arrange the plates. Harshman has collected his plates in a variety of ways. He's purchased several from individuals he's met through collecting, bought some at antique stores, and even found some through taking classified ads out in 15 area newspapers. Harshman has several plates. The 1979 one is part of his display that came from his last job. Harshman, who retired in 1993, said he'd had a lot of different jobs, but ended up at the Brock's Candy Factory in Sullivan. Brock's owner, E.J. Brock, would have me put them on his station wagon, and I would keep the old ones, Harshman said, laughing. Those all have E.J.B. on them. Harshman doesn't get online, but he knows people who do, including Illinois 6th Judicial Circuit Judge Dan Flannel of Sullivan, a longtime friend of Harshman's. I was in his office talking to him one day, and I asked him, "Can you buy stuff on the internet?" Harshman said. He said he could, turned the computer on, and started bidding. Some I got, some I didn't. The eBay auction item Harshman won was supplied by Barb Sistak and Tom Bauer from Island Lake, northwest of Chicago, where they run a website called licenseplategarage.com. It was the oldest plate in his collection, the 1907. That was the first year cars were registered with the Illinois Secretary of State's office, when 12,000 cars were registered for a $2 fee. From 1907 to 1909, motorists were responsible for furnishing the plates. Quote, they bought the numbers at the hardware store, and you put them on yourself, Harshman said. Harshman has several copies of some years. He has the ones in the best shape repainted by local artist Teresa Poland. At 91, Harshman still lives on his own and drives, often traveling around central Illinois looking for plates. I've been to some places, he said, laughing. And there's a picture of Mr. Harshman in his red plaid shirt standing in front of this remarkable display of some of his license plates in his Sullivan home. Some of these are from his own vehicles and some are those he has collected. He continues to collect plates and bought his first car in 1948. This would be a very interesting collection to see in person, I do believe. We have a little time, so I'm going to return here to the opinions page and read a couple of letters to the editor about local issues. James Knuckles of Decatur writes this. I would like to know why automobiles are allowed to run on our streets without insurance. If we were to do that, we would get a ticket or the police would take our car. Bill Mitchell is right. All the car keys in the state should be on Governor Bruce Rauner's desk or in his office until we get a budget. I see that Mitchell got his wish that all senators and representatives not get paid until a budget on the governor's desk is signed. It's about time. Mr. Knuckles is probably talking about a prior letter. Here's another one. Voters, what a nice letter to the editor Mark Bartolome wrote about his former co-worker Brad Sweeney. Seems like our mayor and city council could see that maybe Brad is right. A 20-year law enforcement career has been ruined. I cannot remember anything like this happening when Mike McElroy was mayor and Ryan McGrady was city manager. All the new city manager has done is raise taxes and cause a man to lose his job. Now the city taxpayers are going to pay attorneys to defend him. When the next election comes around to elect people to run the city, we should think long and hard about experienced and qualified people. That letter was written by Vivian Reynolds of Decatur. And this, the Millikan Decatur Symphony Orchestra concert on April 23rd was fantastic. Michael Luxner's swan song performance was breathtaking. What an orchestra, what a choir, what performers, but most of all, what a conductor. Then for a finale, he leaps off the podium onto the stage. Thank you, Michael Luxner. We will all miss you. A letter from Mary Stanbos of Decatur. Here's the thought for today. Each day and the living of it has to be a conscious creation in which discipline and order are relieved with some play and pure foolishness. Written by May Sarton, American poet, early 1900s. This has been Carol Bond with the Decatur Herald and Review, dated May 3rd, 2016. I look forward to reading you with you again next week.